Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
It's Friday night, it's still number one, it's the UK Tech Weekly podcast. I'm not Matt Egan, and I'm most certainly not editorial director here at IDG UK, but I am a human with just enough sense of how to breathe continuously so as to avoid death, and therefore I'm able to bring you the spikiest of audio pineapples, just close enough to your ears for you to hear the call of the juicier audio fruit within. In the absence of our spirited songmaster general, I am Henry Burrell, staff writer at these here shores, and I've rustled up the courage to bring you an audio platter on which to feast. But first, what's on the menu? We've come to dine at an audio restaurant run by the tech chefs at PC Advisor, Macworld UK, Techworld, and Computerworld UK. So, as I awkwardly take your coats and lead you towards your 40-minute audio dining experience, are the suspicious-looking fellows in the room with me the waiters or the customers? I'm happy to tell you, listener, that they are neither, and they are in fact our starters, mains and dessert, and I for one can't wait to eat them all. For starters, I am happy to serve a fresh bowl of Lewis Painter, staff writer at PC Advisor and Macworld UK.
Hello!
For mains, I prepared a generous serving of the hearty Christopher Manassian, staff writer at PC Advisor and Macworld UK.
This is genuinely amazing.
And for the dessert that you order, even though you're full, it's sugary Chris Martin, consumer tech editor at PC Advisor.
Bonjour.
This week, if you can bear it, we're chatting Pokemon Go, iOS betas and PlayStation. I hope you've packed your Ultra Balls, and if you don't get what I mean, then you're probably cooler than us. If you've ever wanted to be the very best like no one ever was, and on top of that, if you're certain that to catch them all is your real test, while at the same time to train them is your cause, then not only do you hold very vague life ambitions, but you'll also be excited to learn that you can now catch them all like never before on your smartphone. Chris Martin, please explain, what is Pokemon Go? And will it catch on, or is it just a fad like Bebo, Moon Boots, and Lewis Hamilton?
Okay. Lewis Hamilton.
He's a fad.
Okay, Pokemon Go is the latest Pokemon game, and it's not for Nintendo consoles.
Okay.
It's not for the 3DS or anything like that. It's for your phone or your tablet.
So this is the first time we've seen Pokemon leave like a console and come to an app store? Is this the first time we've seen this?
Not as such. There have been some other Pokemon apps, but they've been like Pokemon Shuffle, which was kind of like
bad.
Kind of like Bejeweled, but
oh, okay,
but
yeah,
Pokemon,
yeah. Like Pokemon, like Pinball, like all those games.
Kind of, yeah. So there's been a few, but this is the first one which is actually, you know, catching Pokemon.
Okay, so
in
you,
the regular sense.
So you actually catch them in the real world? Is that
you
what you
actually
do?
Physically go out with your phone into the world outside of the building. In the fresh air and the sunshine.
Okay.
Or the rain here.
It's quite unlike gaming, isn't it?
Outside? The game?
Yeah.
What?
So you go out with GPS turned on.
Yep.
And
they appear
you need,
before you.
You need data as well.
Of course.
And then
course.
As you walk around, you kind of... You have to look at your phone a lot.
Yeah.
So, you, like, I did it yesterday as we went out to an event and almost died a couple of times. So you need to be very careful because it's like, it's almost like using a sat-nav, but you're looking for Pokemon instead of getting directions.
Okay, cool.
Which is infinitely cooler,
yeah.
Obviously.
So basically, yeah, you go around and every now and then, if you're kind of in the right area, a Pokemon will pop up.
Yep.
And then you tap on it on the screen and then you can catch it. And you get like an augmented reality view of whatever you are looking at through your phone's camera plus the Pokemon like on screen. So
cool.
You could be standing in Hyde Park and a drowsy could appear and then you've got to catch him in Hyde Park.
Cool. So I mean, I'm glad you said augmented reality there, because I think augmented reality has taken a bit of a bashing in the tech press after the failures, we could say, of something like Google Glass. So it's quite cool to see that something as accessible as Pokemon, are we agreeing here, that is now available on your smartphone. But I'm pretty certain that it's not available everywhere. It's a beta. Is that right? Or is it sort of being rolled out slowly?
I don't think it's a beta, but it's on the Google Play Store, but it doesn't come up if you search for it. And then if you can find it via like a link,
right,
it will just say not compatible with all your devices, because they launched it in like Australia and New Zealand first.
Oh, okay. So it's only available in some countries at the moment.
Yeah. So we've managed to basically grab the APK, which is the file for the app, and just sideload it on some devices so that we can play it.
Okay, cool. Does it cost anything? Will people have
no,
to pay for it?
It's free.
Yeah.
With in-app purchases.
What do they get? Yeah, Pokeballs.
Pokeballs and all
gold
sorts
coins.
Of,
sort of the important thing.
Potions, is that a thing?
Lots of different
I'll
things.
I'll play Pokemon Blue. Can you battle people in the real world, or is it simply just more of a collecting game? Like,
a lot of it's collecting, but there are battles. I haven't had one yet, so I can't really explain it much, but there are.
Fair.
Basically, it's like going on Google Maps kind of slash Street View, but in Pokemon version. So like ages ago, Google and Pokemon Company did like this collaboration where you could go on Google Maps and discover and collect Pokemon.
Oh, okay.
But you had to like, they were all 150 or 151 were in specific places on Google Maps around the whole world.
So like them. Yeah.
In St. Pancras, there was a Pokemon, but I think that was the only one like there.
Yeah,
well, there might have been some duplicates. So I think that was a bit of a precursor to Pokemon Go.
But I mean, I know that you three game more than I do. But I mean, do you play mobile games, Christopher?
Not really, actually. Mobile games has never been something I do. But that sounds interesting.
Yeah,
see, I'm quite heavily into my mobile gaming, I think.
Yeah, but have you ever seen anything like this before?
Not really. No, because it's kind of different. Because I think it's the first. Well, I mean, not the first, but it's the first really popular game that's encouraging people to not only play games on their phones, but go outside and explore and actually walk around, because you can't just sit at home catch a Pokemon. So you're forced to go outside if you want to get any better at the game. It's pretty good. You have to go outside.
No, I like it. I think it's, again, I'm not much of a mobile gamer, but I mean, anything I have played, it's just like the console experience on a tiny screen, right? Which does have its limitations.
Yeah.
So do you think it's something we'll see more companies taking advantage of? I mean, it's a pretty clever idea. But can you think of any other ways that that kind of technology might be used?
Geocaching? I don't really know a lot about geocaching, but I imagine some kind of augmented reality geocaching would be pretty cool. So kind of similar to Pokemon, but instead of Pokemon, you find other bits and bobs, whether it could be like a discount to like a shop or something. Like, you know, like if companies are kind of investing in it, you could find discounts for clothes and crap like that.
Okay, well, so for the listener, like geocaching is basically like orienteering, right? But with a phone.
Yeah,
yeah, essentially.
Cool. Well, you go and find a physical box.
Yes.
I think, and then you see what's in it. And I think you're supposed to leave, you're supposed to like take what's in it, but then you're supposed to put something in for like the next person who finds the box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it.
I've never actually done it, but
no.
But basically Pokemon Go is like geocaching, kind of, but for Pokemon.
Okay, cool.
And they're not real, sadly.
You know, I've seen you play it, and I'll probably give it a download and do it myself when it comes out. But if the listener's thinking this is their bag, how long do you think they're going to have to wait until it's readily available on, is it Android and iOS?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's launched in the US now.
Okay.
So the UK can't be far behind. Like, it's rolling out now. So by the time we publish this podcast, it could be out in the UK. It might not be, but it won't be very long. It'd be a matter of days at the most, I think.
Okay, cool. Any last words on Pokemon? Obviously, the place to find all the updates is with us at PC Advisor.
Yeah. Well, I think just playing it, I thought, I'm into Pokemon.
Yeah, that always helps.
Like, what I did find was that it was quite a nice tour of London. Like, it kind of made me look at
seeking out the green spots.
Kind of, yeah, like, and they have placed Pokemon in green areas, so you've got to go find a little park to kind of like have a much better chance of one popping up. And then there's Pokestops, which are like in Pokemon, you'd go to the Poke Center and buy like Pokeballs and go to a shop and buy stuff. Whereas in Pokemon Go, you basically use landmarks around you So the British Library over the road from our office is a Pokestop. And if you're in the vicinity, you can tap on it, and then a little kind of circular like picture of the British Library comes up, and you spin it, and then you get like items like Pokeballs. Okay, so cool. They're free.
Yeah, it's like rewarding you for like exploring the place you're in as
and
well.
And like
yeah.
even just walking 10, 15 minutes down the road, the Pokestops were like some things I didn't even know were there. So it was kind of like a nice little tour.
It'd be interesting to see whether or not cities are more populated, or whether or you can just take this out, you know, sort of the edges of a 3G signal.
I did
and see
use
what happens.
It between the station and my house in Luton.
Yeah.
And there wasn't much going on.
No.
So, you're definitely better off doing Pokemon Go in cities.
Okay, cool.
But it must have just taken them ages to put all these Pokestops and everything. I mean, they've blatantly used like things like Google Street View and Google Maps to do it all.
Yeah.
But they've had to individually, you know, create each one. So it must have taken a long time.
Yeah, I think it's good to see. But and hopefully it's
I'm definitely
going to
avoid the like £79 in-app purchase.
What's that?
I think it just gets you like, you know, probably like a million Pokeballs or something. I don't know.
Well, if you've got cash to burn and a smartphone, then this seems to be your game. Okay, so that was Pokemon Go. Just going to ask around the table, Pokemon Go, 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 or Pokemon No, No, No? Christopher Manassians.
Pokemon Go.
Nice. Lewis Painter.
Pokemon Go, Go, Go.
Can probably guess, Chris Martin.
Pokemon Go, Go, Go.
It's a Go, Go, Go with your Pokemon. Cool. Right, coming up, iOS. Much like Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, most of us were handed an apple by one debatably serpentine Steve Jobs, and we took it, and it tasted good. And ever since, we've been basking in the warm glow of app-based sin. Is it wrong to get so excited about an iOS update? Christopher Manassians, what happened this week with Apple's iOS 10, and why should our beloved listeners be excited?
I'd just like to stress how good these intros are.
Too kind.
They're amazing. So iOS 10 is in beta. It was announced at WWDC. 2016, which took place on the 13th of June, if my fish memory remembers right.
Details.
So iOS 10 was released, and but that was only released to developers.
Okay.
It's still not out to the general public, at least as far as I'm aware. It should be out to as a beta to the general public this month, because they said July. It could come in August.
So for any listener who's not quite sure, for a software beta, what does that mean? And is it sort of like an unfinished version of a product?
Exactly.
So you're to expect bugs, but it's a way for Apple to sort of canvas how it's going.
Absolutely. So they've had like a few features. For example, they had they added like the folders, the way the folders look on your iOS app drawer. And they used to be glass looking. When you clicked on them, it have a glass sort of background. In iOS 10 and beta 1, they thought, we'll make it transparent. A lot of people complained, and now in beta 2, which just recently came out this week, they reverted that change. So it's a way of Apple experimenting a few things, and then also Apple actually having people, well, at this stage, developers test and feedback to them to say, actually, this doesn't work, this could be improved, why don't we work towards, you know, certain other features. There's always this long-standing rumor that we're going to have like a dark mode, which essentially switches the whole iPhone into like a black background versus a white background that we're normally used to. And that is a certain feature that a lot of people are requesting, but hasn't been included in any of the betas yet.
Oh, right.
See, it's interesting because tvOS has got a dark mode coming, and that was announced at WWDC. So it would make sense for Apple to announce the dark side. The dark mode for iOS at the same time. And I don't know whether they're trying to make it exclusive to the iPhone 7 when it comes out, because this is what Apple usually does. You know, it'll kind of have it exclusive for one product, and it makes you think you need that product to get that thing. So it could be the same thing with dark mode. I can't see why it would be, because it's software only. It doesn't require a lot of power, but...
And also, correct me if I'm wrong, but to me, dark mode, something like that, seems quite a minor feature for an iOS. Yeah. It's incredible, really, that Apple can drum up so much interest in these betas.
Is it the same as the one on like the OnePlus 3, where like menus and stuff are basically black instead of white?
Essentially, exactly. It's nothing too special.
Been around on Android for... I would love it if Apple did like a bit in a keynote and just went... something, something dark. Tim then Cook. Moved on. Tim
Cook. didn't address it at all. Yeah. Like, so next up.
Yeah, I mean, just to me, I mean, obviously they have to drag these things out for developers in order to make sure that they have the best kind of software available. Do you reckon that it's indicative that they, rather than telling us exactly what we want, they have got to the point now where Apple is sort of saying, okay, we're going to try and keep the hardware a secret, but the software needs to be not open source, but it's like an open community, isn't it?
They've become a lot more open in recent years. You know, once upon a time, Apple were, you know, like the FBI.
Yeah.
nothing went out. You couldn't find out anything. And then I think it was like the iPhone 4 started, leaks just started appearing everywhere for the hardware side of things. And then, yeah, the public beta of, iOS and macOS, as it's called now, really surprised me because, you know, Apple was, you know, one of those companies that are like, we don't want you finding out what we are planning until we're ready to show it to you.
Mm.
And it just seems like they've thrown that out of the window with this. I mean, I'm not complaining in any way, shape or form because it gives nerds like me a chance to play around with it before the public has a chance to. And generally speaking, the public betas are pretty stable compared to the developer betas because Apple knows, even though they tell you don't put it on your main device,
you
everybody's
will.
Got to. Because who has a spare iPhone laying around? Is it?
Apart from us.
Present company excluded.
True. No, that's a really good point. And I think, yeah, the Apple always seems to introduce its new phones, but we kind of always guess or pretty much know exactly what's going to be on them. Do you think iOS 10 is going to make the iPhone 7 or whatever it might be called significantly better? Do you think the software does really make the difference? And do you think that they kind of are able to sell that improvement through through the hardware, through the excitement around a phone?
I mean, I think that, you know, iOS 7 was a huge change to Apple, wasn't it? It was kind of, you know, complete redesign of the operating system, essentially, since it first came about. And I feel like, you know, iOS 8, iOS 9, while they're pretty good, they were kind of focused more on background updates, kind of, you know, improvements to security, battery life, performance, stuff like that. And, you know, making the developers happy and giving them more extensions, stuff like that. Whereas iOS 10, I feel like, is another redesign for Apple. It's another consumer-focused software update where you get the new notification center, you get all the new widgets, you get all this new stuff, all this new sexy stuff. And I think that will help, but I think there will have to be some unique software features to push people to the iPhone 7.
Well, one thing which gets me in iOS 10 is it's absolutely massive for iOS users, but pretty standard for Android, is that you can remove pre-installed apps and you can remove apps that are...
It's quite a big thing for
It's
Apple,
a massive thing for Apple. I mean, that's one of the things that, like, on this iPhone right here, I've got, like, a folder 5S. Of, like, 10... Yeah. The 5S, exactly. Fantastic. Thank you, David. It's got, like, a folder which has got, like, 15 apps in there, which I'm never going to use, but they're pre-installed and I have to have
them. So, I think we reported this a couple of weeks ago. Can you actually remove the pre-installed apps,
it doesn't,
or is it hiding them?
It doesn't actually.
That's
delete
the thing. So it
stocks,
which is similar to some Android phones, where you can disable the app,
but they're still sitting in the
actually,
background.
Yeah, so it doesn't actually free up the storage.
See, the funny thing about iOS, there.
But the weird thing is, I've heard that you do have to actually go and download them in inverted commas.
That's right.
If you want them back again.
So Apple is effectively tricking you into thinking they're deleted, when actually they're not.
Yeah. So you have to go through the whole process of going to the App Store and going and downloading one, but it won't actually kind of re-download it. It's a bit.
All you're doing is adding a shortcut back to your home screen to the app, which is already installed.
It's quite bizarre.
Your phone.
That's annoying. That's
so you're not actually saving any space.
That's what they perfected. Is that like when they dumped that U2 album on all our devices and like, no one downloaded it? Yeah,
but, they probably don't amount to that much storage.
No, I can't imagine they do.
No, it's more the actual having them clogging up the home screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because obviously iOS is just icons.
Yeah,
so
like the Apple Watch app sitting there for those who don't have it, you can put it in the background, but it will actually still take up room.
Yeah.
So I suppose we're all hoping that the 16 GB iPhone is no more.
Oh, fingers crossed. That's what rumors suggest. Starting at 32,
it's long overdue.
Yeah,
because I think we will all agree that the iPhone is an expensive product, and even the lowest storage option, the 16, is expensive. So hoping 32, do you think?
I mean, if I'm being really cheeky, I'd hope for a 64. But we all know it's not going to start
at
64.
It's not going to start at 64, but I think it's about time that it started at 32.
100%,
But
I mean, a lot of Android phones, you know, they ship with 32 gig storage now, standard.
That's been standard for maybe even like, a year or so.
That's what I mean,
pattern version,
No. But back to like iOS, but... It sounds like there's lots of good new features coming.
Yeah, definitely.
But there's still some really basic stuff that I don't understand why it isn't there.
Such as?
So, like, So I do use iOS. I've got an iPad Pro. But like when you bring up the control center, that's what it's called, isn't it, at the mm-hmm. bottom, with all the, you know, shortcuts to switch Wi-Fi off and on yeah. and mm-hmm. change the screen brightness, like you can't long press on anything to kind of...
To open the app.
So all you can do is... So Wi-Fi, for example, I change Wi-Fi network quite often, especially here in the office where, you know, one goes a bit bad, so you like switch over to something else. But you can't... All you can do from the control center is switch Wi-Fi on and off. It doesn't even tell you which network you're connected to. You can't long press.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
To kind of open, you know, to kind of shortcut to that yeah. part of the settings menu to then go change the network, which just seems weird. Yeah. Or even just a link in there to open the settings menu.
It's funny you should say that, though, because didn't that just get added in the beta 2?
Oh, did it?
Yeah. That was just about to say. That's why I've got...
Tell us.
You know, you can now add 3D touch quick action items. You can 3D touch them, but that is only a few settings, so you're still right. I know what you mean by...
But you need a 3D touch enabled.
Exactly.
So 6S or later.
6S plus, yep.
Yeah. So not iPads.
Nope. Yeah,
so I'm still annoyed.
You're still annoyed. Yeah, but I see what you mean, though.
Why isn't it just long press on non-3D touch?
Maybe it will be by the time it comes out.
Yeah, maybe.
But then, it's one of those software-exclusive features that Apple wants you to have to upgrade to the iPhone 6S at least.
Be interesting for anyone listening if it's something that might annoy them, because obviously we deal with these things every day, and some of us use Android, so it's something that we might be in sport with, the little actions you use on your phone that are really convenient. Do you think consumers actually think, wish I could long press Wi-Fi, or do you think they're just glad to have an iPhone and they love it?
It might just be because I'm used to doing it on Android.
Yeah,
but
I kind of understand it's a natural thing to want, but. I kind of wonder the same thing. It's more when I'm explaining really nerdy things to my friends about iPhones and iPads and how to do stuff.
And they blank looks.
They stare at me completely blank and I'm like, okay, maybe I should just shut up now.
Yeah, I know what you mean, actually. A lot of, I show people stuff on Android and they're like, they have no idea you could do some of that stuff. And even like showing people shortcuts on Windows.
Yeah, actually, one of my mates the other day, he lost his iPhone and he bought a OnePlus 2. Secondhand, and we were at lunch and he was just having to ask me, he was like, how do I find my photos, how do you search? He was like, I can't drag down. And I was like, yeah, to me I was like, you just go, yeah, but like obviously if people are trying to switch over for whatever reason, it can be very frustrating. So
there's a lot of added functionalities, like you were saying, in Android. One of the biggest things for me, I have the Honor 7, and on the fingerprint sensor at the back, if you just scroll down on the fingerprint sensor, it opens up your notification tray, or you swipe up, it goes your app
drawer.
It's
really clever.
It's so smart.
It's not just a fingerprint scanner, it's basically a trackpad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why nobody else has done that.
Exactly.
I suppose they made one upon the Honor.
Same deal.
Yeah, it's a shame for these Android manufacturers who are obviously not as popular as Apple, that little innovations like that will just get lost.
Yeah.
And we're all sort of waiting with bated breath to a certain extent for the new iPhone, but what do you think it's really going to add? I mean, the only rumor I've really seen is no physical button, but to me that doesn't really matter. Yeah. Like,
I think, I mean, while everyone was getting really excited for the iPhone 7 a few months ago, you know, the most recent rumors suggest that we're not actually going to see a redesigned iPhone this year. It's going to be the third year of the recycled iPhone 6 design, possibly with slight changes to the bezel, but they're just unconfirmed rumors at the moment. And of course, the changed home button. But I mean, I understand why with the home button, but it's more kind of on Apple's side than more on the consumer side, because the home button does tend to break a lot.
Yeah,
so it's cheaper for them, because if you have a static button that's detected, that's full touch enabled, it's one less part for them to replace when it breaks.
And let's not be around the bush either. They'll still sell just as many.
Oh, yeah, let's be honest. Yeah, even if they get rid of the headphone jack, they're still going to sell as many.
Yeah.
The biggest thing will be the size. Because the iPhone, like, so the Plus model of the 6 and the 6S is just huge. Mm. For a 5.5-inch phone, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So not having the button will significantly reduce the actual size of the handset.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of bigger screen phones with a much actually smaller body, right?
Oh, yeah.
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 Okay, that'd be cool. I think we've covered a good chunk there of Apple and its latest updates. So hopefully, if you check back with Macworld UK, you might be able to download it pretty soon. So I'm just going to go around the table. No. Christopher Manassians.
Amazing. I or yes.
Lewis Painter.
I or yes.
Splendid. Chris Martin.
I. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Okay, cool. No, we've got fly in the ointment. Brilliant. Okay, coming up after this short break, we are chatting about PlayStation. As Jamiroquai once informed us, the future's made of virtual insanity. But as this makes little to no sense, the world seems to think the future actually lies in virtual reality. We used to go on holidays to far-off lands and throw ourselves from aeroplanes, but you have to ask yourself, what is the point if you can do it all in your front room on your PlayStation? Lewis Painter. You love VR more than life itself. So what's Sony doing about it?
Love the intro. Caught me off guard there. Yeah, no, basically, Sony is releasing PlayStation VR for PlayStation 4.
Okay.
Much like the Oculus Rift and HTC Vive for PC, the PlayStation VR will be powered by the PlayStation, which is interesting because, you know, the Oculus Rift and the HTC Vive require a pretty strong PC.
So at least you're dropping like a grand, right?
Strong PC.
A pretty strong PC, yeah. You need the arms, you need the guns to run VR. But yeah, no, basically it means so you're paying between £500 and £700 for a VR headset for PC, mm-hmm. and then you're paying out at least £800, I'd say, for a decent VR PC.
It?
Yeah, so you're looking at over a grand for a VR setup. Whereas PlayStation, on the other hand, it will run on any of the PlayStation 4s that are out at the moment. And, you know, it's half the price of the HTC Vive at £350.
Yeah.
But it does require you to buy the PlayStation camera and the Move controllers separately.
Okay.
So that is an extra added cost, which it didn't tell you about.
Sneaky. So do we know the price of the headset yet?
Yeah, so the headset's £350. You can pick up a PlayStation for about £200, maybe even less.
Pounds, £350, yeah. Okay, cool.
And then because the Move controllers are the same ones from the PlayStation 3, they can be picked up in, you know, CEX and Game and stuff like that secondhand for like 10, 15
quid. So that's already out, the camera.
So they're already out. You can grab them and the camera as well. You can grab them.
Okay, cool.
Now already.
So it's still an expensive venture for most people, but seeing as PlayStation 4s are sitting in quite a lot of living rooms all over the world, mm-hmm. do you think this is going to be more successful than perhaps some of the more developer-ish VRs like the Vive that we've seen at the moment?
Mm-hmm. So this is what I've been wondering myself. It provides more people with the opportunity to try VR, essentially. And I feel like it will do well. You know, in the US, the day one pre-order sold out of in minutes. So, you know, you've got the hype over there, you know, definitely. And with PlayStation launching 50 VR titles on release day, there's an abundance of content to choose from. And they said they've got, you know, over 100 developers working on VR content to be launched within the first 6 months of PlayStation VR hitting the market. Okay. So you've got a lot of content.
A lot.
Yeah.
They've basically nailed it, haven't they?
Yeah.
I mean, it hasn't come out yet, but like, it's just a recipe for success.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, so, you know, millions of people already have a PlayStation 4, which is ready to run it.
Yeah.
And like you say, you can pick up the extra gear on eBay for probably next to nothing, because mm-hmm. not many people really use the camera and the Move things, you know, regularly. And then, you know,
adding,
you know, for most people that are into their gaming and their PlayStations, like £300 for the headset isn't going to be mm-hmm. too bad if they're really into it, and with the promise of loads of titles.
Yeah. And the fact that it's released in October, which means it's ideal for Christmas.
Comes out just, yes, classic. So, Classic,
classic.
It's like they've done this before.
And the fact that there's other VR headsets like the Vive that are way more expensive, just that makes it such a barrier. Surely it's just going to make it seem even better.
I mean, it's kind of like when PlayStation 4 just launched, when it first launched, you know, you had this massive battle between PS4 and Xbox One, which Xbox ultimately lost because PlayStation undercut them on price by like 50 quid or something like that. I mean, I remember they did drop their prices eventually, but by that point, the damage was done. People went for the PlayStation because it was cheaper, because it provided them with something they wanted. And I feel like it'll probably be the same with the VR headset. You know, you've got something that's cut, you know, half the price of the Vive. You know, I used it recently. It's the resolution of the headset isn't as high as the Vive, so you can't expect the same high quality, crisp VR graphics that you'll get with the Vive and a powerful PC. But obviously, for half the price and a weaker console, you can't expect the same quality. And for what it is, I was actually really surprised.
And you're really getting a better library of games, you reckon?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Sony are really pushing the development of games, of VR games, and they're all really varied and different, not just kind of your same sat in a car shooting out the window. You've got
what did you play on it yesterday?
Funnily enough, I was sat in a car shooting out the window. It's the London Heist, Cockney, East End Gangsters. Really love
right
that kind
of street.
Thing. Yeah, right on my street. Because it's really reminiscent of the
Are
old...
Are you the main character?
You know, I was like, is that me sat in VR? What? No, because it just reminded me of the old Getaway games on like PlayStation 2. Really old school Cockney. Yeah, shoot 'em ups.
What do you reckon, Christopher? Like, I mean, you're a PC guy, but surely do you agree that you can see the attractiveness?
Well, unfortunately, there's two problems that I have with PlayStation VR.
Fight.
Let's go. No, this
they're going. What are they?
So, the reason why, on PC, you've got, say, £800 PC, right? Mm-hmm. And then someone's investing about £400 or £500 on the Vive. So the VR bit of it is actually cheaper. And your PlayStation side, you've got a £200 console. So someone's bought a console because they couldn't afford a PC or they just wanted it for convenience. Mm-hmm. And then they're spending more money on the VR side of it than they're doing on the actual console. Which, yeah, it's been popular. I just don't... I mean, it is less expensive mm-hmm. and it's more accessible. There's a lot of pros, as you mentioned, as we've just been talking. The problem I find is that when the item itself is more expensive than the actual console and it's limited by its graphics, like mm-hmm. you said, it's compatible with a few PlayStations, like PlayStation 4, PlayStation 4.5 Neo, and then the ones coming out in the future, it is always going to be limited. So for someone to really have a dip into the VR world, that's fair enough, but mm-hmm. they still do have to spend about 400 odd quid, I would say, for the motion controllers plus the VR, mm-hmm. let alone the VR games that they want
to
buy.
That is the one downside to Sony. They really overprice their games, generally speaking.
But these are people that spend a lot of their disposable income on this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And for anyone that's had a PlayStation 4 sitting around for a while and kind of not got, you know, kind of tailed off in their usage, mm-hmm. this would be like a really good excuse to...
get it back out.
Like, be like, well, I've got it sitting there, so I'll get more use out of it if I buy this. Kind of, you know, justifying your expensive purchase.
Yeah.
I feel like these are, like, people that own PlayStations are the kind of people that will just splash out on it.
Yeah.
Because they'll go, yeah.
It's gamers. Like, it's a new thing. Like, you know, it's
arguably exciting.
One of the biggest things since, you know, console gaming became a massive thing. Yeah. It's like the next step for some people. Well, that's how some people see it. It's the next step in gaming. So for those people... they're like, well, 350 quid for a headset that allows me to be in the game. They're like, yeah, let's do it.
I think the other element is the bragging rights because...
Yes. 100%. Yeah.
Well, stick that on the tube.
You know, Xbox versus PlayStation has always been a big deal. Mm-hmm. And there isn't one for the Xbox.
Nope.
Yeah.
So,
true.
You know, it's even more reason for all the PlayStation owners to go out and get one and be like, we've got VR.
So, and it's the wider picture with Sony in general, I know, Lewis, you were writing about the PS4 Neo.
Yes.
Can you quickly run through exactly what that is? And will that improve their VR experience? Or is it all part of the, you know, the juggernaut that is PlayStation?
Well, basically, prior to E3, there was all these rumours going around about the next generation PlayStation 4. I mean, it wasn't quite next gen. It wasn't the PS5.
Okay.
But it was an upgrade over the standard PS4. Because obviously console gaming, the console's the same since it was released. You know, there's no upgrades in hardware or anything like that. Whereas PCs and stuff like that, you know, they get yearly upgrades. They get better. The graphics get better. They get faster. And I think PlayStation wanted to do a bit of that, really. So basically, the Neo is an upgraded PlayStation 4 with... better graphics. You know, it's faster. It should have more storage. Not all the specs have been released yet, but they claim there's going to have 4K gaming, which I
have Sony really confirmed excited. That this is a thing.
They well, they don't actually come out right and say it, but the way they're talking about it in kind of certain interviews and rumors and stuff like that, it seems to be that it won't, because Xbox are also boasting 4K playback, but I think it's only for movies.
Okay. So this is the Xbox One S.
Yeah, the Xbox One S.
Which is confirmed or rumoured?
Oh, yeah, this has been announced. At
okay,
E3.
Great. Cool.
So this is coming out actually next month. Sweet. So in August, which is kind of a slightly odd time to release a new console. Yeah. Like, as in not around Christmas.
Might be a bit panicky getting in there first.
So it's basically smaller and lighter and thinner than the current Xbox One.
Okay.
And the power units inside the console, which is nice for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it does support 4K, but it's only for like, you know, streaming films and stuff. It's not for gaming.
Okay, cool.
I think Xbox have kind of shot themselves in the foot, because that Xbox One S is an upgraded version, and it's, I think, cheaper than the current Xbox One, well, at least at the release price, not now. And so the One S is another way of people going, if they want to get into the Xbox console and the Microsoft world, then they're going to be buying a One S, which is great, but then it just kills off your whole One production line. So
I've also got a bit of an issue with the Xbox One S.
Tell.
Because, the Neo is set to improve everything about the PlayStation, whereas the Xbox One S doesn't really provide much else, but they also announced Project Scorpio at the same time, which is due out next year, which is going to be a fairly impressive upgrade. But what they've done there, in my opinion, is that they've gone, look, we've got this amazing thing coming out next year, but for now we've got this.
Is the One S going to be cheaper at launch than the original Xbox One was? Do we know that? Because I always thought, I mean, I, as I said, don't game as much as you guys, but when I've seen slimmer consoles come out in the past, it's been generally unlike the new PlayStation, where the specs don't actually get bumped. It's just a smaller casing or something, and like that doesn't really matter when it's a home console.
It's basically like that.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of pitched at anyone who didn't get round to buying an Xbox One now.
Right.
And then it's something, and then they don't feel like they're buying something that's really old and
ticking
like,
some
outdated.
Christmas boxes. Yeah.
So it's kind of like, I'm kind of with Lewis. It's like, it's a bit of an odd move to be like, here's a new console. It's like kind of an upgrade in a few ways, but there's something way better coming in 2017. So like, you should kind of wait around for that, but I guess they want you to buy both, so
their problem is that the PlayStation has one upped them, because the PlayStation is going to come out before the Xbox, the new one.
The Neo is set to launch in September. So
if you're looking into 4K gaming, if you're looking into high spec console gaming, when I say high spec, I really do mean high spec.
He's doing the
inverted
thing.
inverted commas. You know, being someone PC master race, it's kind of different. But and then they're going to take all that VR crowd as well with them.
Yeah.
And as you said, the PlayStation VR, you can get it quite soon, and you can play on all the PlayStations, and you can port it onto the new one. It's a win-win. So, whereas the Xbox is going to come out later.
Has Microsoft not said anything about a VR headset for the Xbox?
No, I remember Oculus announced something about a theater mode for the Xbox One, so that you could play your Xbox One games on like a virtual theater screen in like your own personal theater if you didn't have a lot of space in
like
your bedroom.
Like playing on a cinema screen or something.
It's like pretending you had a cinema room.
Essentially, but beyond that, I haven't really heard a lot. There was a couple of rumors at one stage, but they've kind of died out and nothing's been
said. It's just weird because they've got the HoloLens, which is their like augmented reality headset, which seems to be for all sorts of uses.
It's pretty cool.
Although it's still kind of, you know,
let's get Pokemon Go on it.
It's still far from a consumer product.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you know, I'd be surprised if they weren't working on some like kind of, you know, a smaller, cheaper, more consumery, you know, gaming version of the HoloLens for the Xbox. Maybe they have just kept it really secret, but
maybe it'll launch alongside the Scorpio.
That seems an odd thing to do these days. Yeah, that was, especially with, you know, competition so fierce with the PlayStation, that they would want to leak that.
My take was that Microsoft's business strategy right now is to release a Scorpio alongside the HoloLens, which will be updated for consumers, and then couple that with Xbox Play Anywhere, with the integration with Windows 10. In theory, you've got the best gaming solution that you could think of, the best complete gaming solution. That's the way they would phrase it, because you can play on your Windows PC, you can play on your Xbox, and you can play VR all one and you can play simultaneously. So it's yeah. it's just, if you think of it that way, that's why they're delaying the Scorpio launch, maybe. Because the specs are out there.
You're definitely right that the Xbox Play Anywhere is a huge feature. I just don't think Microsoft's that good at communicating.
Yeah. Yeah.
The PlayStation yeah. message is so simple. It's mm-hmm. just buy a game. Like, yeah. You know, we've had to write articles explaining what Xbox Play Anywhere yeah. is, and yeah. you know, gaming across different platforms. It's kind of, for most consumers, can't get their head around it. So anyway,
so I know. No, it's shaping up to be an interesting battle. I think you guys have kind of decided who's already won here. But we'll check back in on it definitely in the next few weeks on the pod. September time for the PS Neo.
Yeah, that's what I suggested. September, October should be out.
Okay, sweet, cool. Well, you heard it here first, obviously, listener. And with that, I'm just going to quickly go around the room. PlayStation for the nation or Sony yet so far?
For the nation, it's amazing.
That was Christopher Manassi's Lewis Painter.
PlayStation for the nation, of course.
Chris Martin.
I've never owned a PlayStation, but PlayStation for the nation.
No one said my favourite pun of the day. Okay, cool. Well, and with that, thank you, listener, for dining at this edition of the UK Tech Weekly podcast. As ever, please do get in touch to let us know what you thought of all that and to shake us down for cash, or indeed, if you're interested in advertising. You can tweet us at UK Tech Podcast or email editor@idg.co.uk. We'll be back next week, as ever, with more informed opinion on the top tech topics of the past 7 days. Whichever way you've ended up here, please know that you can also listen to us via iTunes, SoundCloud, embedded online, or in bed offline. Don't forget to subscribe and tell your friends, and what a veritable ear feast you've just cropped a load of. And thank you. Until next time, say goodbye, guys.
Goodbye.
Bye.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.